The honey period is what you just see that's sparkling. And I said to myself, I almost turned my head around and looked at me and said, hey, that was good. And then say, where did it go? It goes down to the roots where it belongs, to the very heart of the tree. And then you don't see it. Therefore, you don't see it. But next you see it in its flowers. And then you see it in its fruits. And that's what it's all about. The honey period is what you just see that sparkling. And I said to myself, I almost turned my head around and looked at me and said, hey, that was good. And that's happened many times since.
Were most of those Westerners that new group?
Yes, you see, the days were different, or the timings were different for the Westerners and then the Easterners, because they were meant to really be in Baba's physical presence and take darshan, so it would not be too tiring for Baba. There were sections made according to the dates, and the timings were given.
Way ahead of time, wasn't it? Baba was in the form, way ahead of time. We had to schedule that.
Yes. So, Jane, the Westerners' days were different, or was it the morning the Westerners and the afternoon the Easterners? I forget.
I think we were early Westerners in April, as I recall.
Yes.
And you even had set a time, Baba sent a time for Africa. Remember when the African people from all over the world, but he had staggered us. Yes. Because I remember he said we were to come in April.
And that was decided, finally, talked over with group heads, Indian group heads. So in India, in this very hall, Baba seated in the chair, and I remember the date because it happened to be Erich's birthday. It was 13th October, 1968. And so they made suggestions where when should your Bombay lovers come, and when should Delhi ones come, and Calcutta, and Andhra, and South, and East, and West. It was, and Baba took minute interest. I mean, he again would ask, he would see, just as usual. And he said, I will give darshan. I will give darshan. And so when we would say, but Baba, you know, you're so tired and frail and you're not well. Isn't that a long program? You know, right after, one, without a break, there had not been any days when you could call intervals, enough interval. No, it was just, Baba said, it's quite easy. Quite easy, I tell you. I'm telling you, it's easy. And that is the time later on, nearer the last days, when he said, "Does it matter if I give my darshan reclining to my lovers?" And Francis, I remember, said, "Baba, your lovers won't mind anything as long as they're with you. Whether you're sitting or reclining or walking, that makes no difference to them." So all those little hints, all very clearly, they're not even hints, very openly and clearly he told us what was to come, but we didn't understand. On the one hand, he closed our eyes. On the other hand, he was making it very clear. And because he even, Eric said, it's not too late, Baba. We can send out a circular right now to say that it's postponed. There won't be darshan this year. It's quite all right, Baba. And Baba said, no, I will definitely give my darshan. It's very simple. And then he looked at him and said, I won't let you down. Mm-hmm. I will give.
And he said, every day.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. You see, when we were here and Baba said about the darshan that he would give in Guru Prasad, he said, when all that is over and we come back here, then I'll give darshan every day. And I happened to be standing here with some notes that I'd taken, and Erich was here along with the men, and I said to myself, uh-oh, Baba said he'd give darshan every day. And Erich said, but I've always told you, Baba, that's what you should do. You should... you should simply make yourself available. So I said, 2 hours. From such and such a time, you shouldn't worry about where will they be housed, are they comfortable, how will they come, what about the transport, nothing. You are just available, And every day they just come. It's their lookout where they stay, what they're doing. And Baba looked at Eric. He heard all this. And he said, every day, every day. Now, I was getting a bit panicky because I said, now, we haven't yet gone to Pune, and he's talking about what he's going to do when we come back. And after that, of course, he changed. He said, no, I can't give Darshan. My health is not at all good. Now, so first there'll be a circular saying, Baba, give Darshan every day, and then later there'll be a circular saying, Baba, won't give Darshan every day. As Eric said, when making announcement, it was like he's playing with a baby, with Bonnie, sweet baby, that's smiling and you know. But the moment the baby does something, you pass it on to the nurse. So the dirty work would be passed on to us saying, sorry, the thing is cancelled, you see. So I said, oh dear. So I said, Baba, after we come from Pune, you see how you feel? And if you want to, of course, we'll send out a circular to everybody then. So Baba then turned to me and just looked at me, heard all this, and said, every day, every day. So I said, better keep quiet with the things. And that's what happened. That's what it's telling us. Every day.
And so he has.
Hey.
And so he has.
Huh?
And so he has.
Yeah.
Still. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How beautiful.
Yeah. He said that in this hall.
In this hall. Every day.
I'll come, when I come back from Pune, I'll give Darshan every day. This gesture is in a continual. Every other day would be with the two fingers.
Mm-hmm.
This is past. This is tomorrow. This was so simple, so fluid, so eloquent, so natural, his gestures, that it wasn't just like the signs things that you do, unless there were particular words that have no signs. It's like the name of a book or name of a place. That's different. But the other signs, he would use both hands, and you never stopped and said, oh, Baba isn't talking. That was really more than, because his face would have that expression. His face would express so much of it. Hand, his whole being. But you've seen some of it in the film, I love that last film we saw of East West Gathering when Jane was with us on Sunday. No, did you see it last Sunday? Last Sunday. And you know how Baba is saying something with a twinkle in his eye and sort of as if he's conspiring with someone? You know? You remember that? When they show the face, but I said it. I said, listen to what I'm... But I said it. You know what the occasion was? You have seen Yogi Sudhanand Bharati sitting next to Baba at Baba's feet on one side, the yogi in that ochre orange robe, and the other side is the Maharani Shanta Devi, whose bungalow this was. I mean, it was her offering to Baba to use whenever he pleased. So the yogi, when he first wrote about coming for the darshan, had wrote to one of the men and had specified the ills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mani did this, or this is what happened. And it seemed that, 65 years ago I met Baba. And my father taught my mother Persian. My mother didn't know Persian. My mother was a little child, just born in India. She was conceived in Iran, but she was just born in India. A few days after they migrated and arrived here, that's after the persecution by the Mahmuds at that time for religion. You either become Mahmudans or leave. So the Zoroastrians in Iran had a hard time. Some left. So my father, it's a long story. So my father taught my mother Persian. How my father knew is quite a different story altogether, because my father didn't go to school. My father didn't become educated from a child. He just left home. As a youth, he left home and everything to look for God, seeking God. So when I was little, I remember my father speaking these languages. You see, the difference between my father and myself could have been the relationship of a grandfather and child, because the difference of age between my mother and my father, my parents, was tremendous. By the time I, the last child, only daughter, not the only daughter, because there was one daughter who died when she was 7. But then all that time there were all these brothers, and I was the girl, at the end of the tail end. So you see, he was pretty old. And so I would see that he would talk in Persian, not only new Persian, he knew scholarly Persian, because he read the Hafiz, he read the Shahnama, which is the history of Iran, along with my mother, because he had taught my mother Persian. So they would sit opposite each other with that sandalwood bookstand. There was also a walnut bookstand, and this big Persian Shahnama would be on it, and they would read together. And as a matter of fact, it was while they were reading the Shahnama, and they were reading about Princess Manija and Bejan, that my mother had to go to hospital with labor pains. And so they named me Manija. We Iranians don't go by horoscopes or anything like that. The Parsis do, because they have adopted a lot of the customs and traditions of the Hindu people among whom they lived. I mean, they were welcomed by them. They were given refuge by them. Because the ones who are called Parsis are also Zoroastrians from Iran, who had come 1,400 years ago. We just tail end of the last century. That's the whole. So then my father knew that. And my father knew Arabic. There was an Arabian friend who was there. He was writing a treatise, a book on something. If he was ever stuck, he would come to my father. And my father would say, no, not this is not. No, this. My father was one of those people that could sit for hours. You could sit near him for hours and silent without saying a word, without my father saying a word, without your having to say a word. And it would be full. It would not be awkward. It would not be fidgety. It would be still and full. Amazing. I mean, I've experienced that too with him. Then, apart from Arabic, my father used to speak Hebrew.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Because there was this old lady who would come, Israeli lady, and she, very beautiful. And she would sit in Zahram, she would talk with my father would talk back, and my mother would every now and then turn around and say, what's going on, you know, that she'd go in the kitchen and do her own thing. So one day, it struck me, even as a child, I said, Babu, how come you know all these languages? You say you never went to school, you just started out from home, left everything, out to go look for God, then how come? And he said, child, it came to me like this, in a moment. Ah, of course. Now, as a child, you accept everything. Absolutely. But when I grew up, years and years later, he died. I came to Baba, and we were there. And I said, wait a minute. What is this bad Bobo had said that it all came to him in a minute? I mean, it took me a long time to learn English and French and maths and geometry and this. And how come he knew so quickly?
And
yeah, so fortunately, it's one of the few questions I asked Baba direct.
Mm.
I said, Baba, Father used to say, Bobo used to say that he knew Hebrew, Arabic, and Persian, and of course, a lot else I don't know, but I'd heard him say these things, and that he knew it in a moment. Sure. Baba made a face, sort of, what? So what? So what? I said, Baba, in a moment, how did
you...
So Baba said, it's all in there. How long does it take to remove a curtain? You know, he pointed to the thing. How long? I said, second, exactly. And then he said that it happens rarely. It is given very rarely to rare people. And when is it given? When you give up totally and wholly something for him, not only to him, but for him, he gives it back. So my father gave up schooling for God, and God just gave it, like that. And that, because apropos of nothing, Baba would refer to Father. In 68, actually, when we were in Guru Prasad, when the subject hadn't come up, I mean. We were in Guru Prasad, and Baba was sitting on the chair by the bed, on the potty chair, and cried. And suddenly he said, Father, my father, none like him in the whole world, no match for him. That's why I was born to him. That is why I chose him. Okay. Long before, when we used to travel in the blue bus, so we went, our blue bus has taken us through the desert, has taken us into the mountains. And when we were way up in the mountains, in Carr and Montgomery, in the blue bus, in the Himalayas, foot of the Himalayas, and these steep mountains, even when the bus was going there, the sound of the effort, it just made that climb, the whole bus, and it would sound like a very loud and angry noises in there. And when we looked down, there was these steep valleys, and we said, oh, hope the bus makes it. The Baba was there, and we were going. And then suddenly Baba turned around and said, you see all these mountains, these ranges that we saw from the window of the bus? How are we going, sitting and going up there in the bus? Yes. You know, my father, he walked all this on foot, looking for me. I never forget that expression on Baba's face. Same when we were going through the desert in Gujarat, he said. Suddenly, I mean, it was always surprising when he made these references, because we weren't thinking of anything like that, you know. So it was difficult to catch on to the context of what Baba was saying, because it was so unexpected. And she said, see all this desert, this wind and desert, and hot. Yes, yes, Baba. We're going in a bus. Yes, car, yes. My father, and I said, Father, walked all this with bare feet. Seriously, he said that. Then he said, looking for me. Looking for me. Never forget that expression. So, where were we? Ah, yes. So, as I begin, I'll begin from the beginning. I met Baba 65 years ago on my birthday, which is coming in a few days. And my mother would tell. He said, you know, Cheryl couldn't make it to the hospital that morning. He had to go to the shop or something. Or some, I don't know. But at that time, Meadow, that Baba was there. So Baba came to the hospital, and Baba is the one who first heard the nurse announce, open the door and say, it's a girl. So it's Baba. So it seemed Baba just went in when he heard that, and he picked me up and held me to him. And Mother said, Meadow, don't Meadow, put it down. And, she hasn't been washed yet. Yeah. So Mother was telling others how she was telling that. Because, you see, we have a similarity, the Zoroastrian religion, in certain ways, to the Jewish religion, in the sense that this is clean and this is unclean, not clean. Well, it's not clean to handle a baby, for the family to handle a baby while it's still covered with the fluid of its mother's womb, you see. The nurse washes it, and then it's clean to pick up the baby. Baba just picked me up and helped. No, don't, Meryl, don't. I wish I had asked her more. Yeah, I remember the entrance, and I've heard about when Baba left home for good. Baba was in Baba House after Upashi Maharaj. That's where he used to bang his head on the stone to retain this ghost consciousness, this world consciousness also, because it was very difficult to... The five careful master brought him down, but he stayed down. He had to have that agony to help him. So he was there for some time. And I was born. I was there. And after that, when he left home for good, my mother said, the last thing Meruk did when he left home was to rock your cradle. But he said, we used to have cradles that were like beds. We were in the cradle for 1 to 3 years. So he rocked the cradle and said, how fortunate, how lucky you were. That means I was. And then my mother would say, yes, Mummy, you really were very lucky. No doubt you are very lucky. But for yourself, not for me, that is not for Mother. Because you came and my Merog went. That means Merwan went, Baba went. Left the house. I came into the house. I suppose it's a couple of years after that. Then Merwan left the house. And it used to make me very happy. Because I was very welcome I was loved by my parents. I loved them. It was a very happy childhood. But it made me feel so good because it showed her love for Baba. How much she must have loved him. That although I was the most welcome child because I was a girl, because she has so many boys, and yet she can say that. She'd rather have him, even as a mother. And she fought for him. She's not one of those who takes anything lying down. She fought for him. But she loved. Baba won always. Yeah. But she accepted. She accepted Baba in the end. Well, when I say in the end, means even from 1937, because at that occasion of the birthday in Nasik, Baba's birthday in 1937, there was thousands there for darshan, and you know, it was a public program too. Mother washed Baba's feet in public. And you don't do that unless you acknowledge the spiritual status of the person you're doing it to. Mm. And so mother was, by that very act, was saying, yes, my son is proud. Another thing, she said to him once, she said, look, Meryl, look, look. She said, I'm told you say Bombay will be destroyed, Pune will be this, Kalan, you know, all these places she started mentioning. She said, well, if anything must happen to Pune, she said, remember, don't do it by fire. Do it by water, if you must. You know, I don't like fire. So remember that. And Baba very solemnly said, because I was there, he said, I remember. And so when in 1962, there was this freak flood in Pune, Erich's mother, Gaima, who was very close to my mother, whenever mother would be there, Baba would have Erich's mother be her companion all the time. You know? So she remembered, she said, remember, mother said, so here we have this blood. So in many ways, mother acknowledged that there was that time when she said, Meryl, I want a picture of you and me, you dressed as Zoroaster. Mm. So Baba had that costume made immediately. You know, the same day the women have it sent down. I forget who it was and what, but Mansari even remembered. And the costume was made, and Baba put it on, and there's a picture of Baba with mother looking so proud and solemn beside him. And Baba dressed as Zoroaster. But she had a very hard time giving him up. First of all, she couldn't understand. I wouldn't say any Zoroastrian would understand. It's not in the Zoroastrian religion. It's like the Mohammedan religion or the Christian religion. But the Zoroastrian, as a community, they're very fine class by itself. You know, be as good as we can, attend church, please God, be kind as and be good, law-abiding. On the whole, that is their thing. But for anything outside of, and when you die, you go to heaven, you know. They do all their thing, but it's a very limited thing. Beyond that, they see nothing. And the same in the Christians. If you're good, you go to heaven. Same with the Christians, Mohammedan, Zoroastrian. Mm-hmm. But the Hindus, no. The Hindus have a depth, absolute depth of the real religion. I mean, what is the goal of life? What is the purpose of life? What is the way? Just, you know, from the Bhagavad Gita, that sort of thing. So we didn't have this. So how would my mother understand? Who is the master? What is the perfect master? What have they got to do with my son? And in India's population, you know, so she'd say, that old man, that Hindu old man there out in Sakuri, and then this mom and an old lady up here in Pune, haven't they got, can't they find any other boy? Why my son? What does that mean? But so she fought with the Pasni Maharaj. Practically, literally, her bangles have been broken in the scuffle between her and Maharaj.
No.
Yeah.
She fought
with the Pasni Maharaj.
She did.
Give me my son. You know, this is the son. So there was a time, they say, there was a scuffle between the two and some of her bangles broke.
That's a good mom.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. But in the end, she acknowledged. Then she knew... She has garlanded him, she has beamed to him, and this old lady in Pune, Baba Jan. But then afterwards, I mean, she and I would go every Thursday, along with anybody who would come home as a guest. Every Thursday we would, at least once a week we would see Babajan, all these years when we were in Pune. But first, I'm talking about the first time when our son was snatched away. So she couldn't go. she probably had it out with Babajan too, and that old lady wasn't listening to her. So she sent her old lady, that means her mother, my grandmother, very beautiful, Golandun. So she said, Golandun, you go and tell that old lady. Tell her that not to keep my son with her for so at any time and any hour. His meals get cold, his supper gets cold, his favorite supper that I can keep. And why does he do that? And go and give her a piece of my mind.
Yeah, right.
And Golandun said, I will. And Golandun went with a determination. She was very, very, very fierce, keen, very beautiful in her day. So anyway, she went, and of course Babajan is just beautiful. So when she went, determined, Babajan looks at a little clock that used to be there. She said, I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting for you. So you've come. Yes, Babajan. When Babajan would look like that and look into your eyes, So she had my granny sit down, and then she said something in Persian, and my granny just melted. My granny replied in Persian, said something else in Persian. They were quoting couplets, lines of hafiz and lines from here. And then before you know it, Babajan was lilting and singing it. And my granny was, in response, was singing again.
Yeah,
so for all the world, here these two old ladies having a grand time, singing to each other. And my grandmother was, just melted and embraced. And this went on and on and back and forth. Everybody else watching what's going on. And my grandmother forgot time, space, purpose, everything. So then Babajan looks at the clock and says, don't you think your daughter's waiting for you? Isn't it time that you leave now? Won't your daughter wait, won't she be anxious? Daughter? Suddenly it comes to mind. Oh, yes, Babajan, yeah. Tell her. He's not her son.
But again, and she never saw it again, after meeting Baba again. But that first day, I realized a soft persimmon, how soft and silky the fruit is. And that's what his skin was like. And there was a light glowing from the inside. It was so beautiful.
As an off-guard, as I like to call it. This is when he was resting on the bed. And it was the afternoon. And the reading had been done. I read out some detective story of Woodhouse or Trilogy or whatever happened to be the book of the time. And he would be resting. And we would be sitting, we women, I'm talking about his roof. And we would be sitting around on our little stools, wooden stools or whatever it was handy. We'd be sitting around it, pressing his body. The legs, the feet, mirror between the hands. One toward the other, the calf, the legs. And like this much, like the pressure for the eggs and that. I think that's what we assume. Anyway, we would do that. And as Baba was resting, eyes closed, as it is completely relaxed and resting. After a while, Baba just said, stop, enough. So we would withdraw our hands. And then we would sit very silently without moving. Because now Baba's resting. We're not in our usual places or in our chairs. We're now right next to Baba. And yet we mustn't move because Baba's resting. That's to remember, we would sit whatever position we were on this room. Absolute stillness, quiet, like sound. And after a while, it seemed to me as if a wave came. Waves came from Baba's person as he was lying there. And the only way I can describe it is that a blind person would be sitting at the beach and knowing he's by the ocean, although he could not see because of the breath, the tang, the what would emanate from the ocean to our nostrils and body, the feeling. And I would get these waves, and the only word would be purity. Waves of absolute purity from his person. from his body and become from him. And you see, Rosh Hashanah, and I still remember it, so we'll run from it. This is amazing. And so God is not only supreme love, he's supreme love. So every moment like that, then he would come around and sit down. And take great pains to appear human. Because as I was telling this story to Jerry and Sally, Baba's like the magician. What he has to show for us to see is what a magician does with his right hand, colorful kerchief, shining, and whatever he says. All your attention is focused on what he is displaying. The very sign of this, secretly, the trick is done with the left hand. Honestly. But sometimes, when one gets a little glimpse of behind the scenes, that has to be really amazing.
What's your story, Didi?
A piece of her mind. The longer she was given a piece of her mind, the better. So she said, did you tell her? Yes, she, yes, yes. Did you tell her everything? Oh, everything, she, everything. Mm-hmm. Did you give her good? Yes, I gave her, really gave her a piece of my mind and yours. So, Mama, I didn't tell her what happened there, didn't she? But afterwards, it was so different. Afterwards, and I tell you, it's a very touching point in my memory, actually a point or a line when Mother gave up Baba, when she gave her son to the world. I was still in school. It was, I think, just a year before I came to Baba. And I never knew of this tragedy within her. All I knew was, and I was conscious of and taking part in it, was the people oppressing her, harassing her, our own community, Irani community, not the Parsi, the Irani community, because she was his mother. That was her only fault, her sin, that she was his mother, that he was her son. Who does he think he is? And therefore we had what was known as an opposition group. They were all around in the neighborhood. Of course, we had other neighbors. We had the Hindus, we had the Mohammedans, we had the Christians, we had the Portuguese, but then the Iranis dotted here and there. They were like in a semicircle. And they were so forcefully aggressive because they had seen him play kites. They had seen him play marbles. They had seen him go to school, just like any other ordinary boy. But then they would say, it's true, he was different from the others. He was, but so what? I mean, he was a different boy. And then even the strongest critics would always stop at one point and say, it's true, he had a beautiful voice. Because in that same Baba house, my father used to sing the Munajat, the Persian thing, and Baba used to sing the Munajat. So the neighbors would hear early in the morning when Baba would sing. So they would say, it's true, he had a beautiful voice. In fact, when the voice would reach them through the little kitchen transoms of the neighbors, they said they stopped doing whatever they were doing, boiling an egg or making tea. They stopped and just listened. They themselves have admitted it. I have seen them say, heard them say, in front of me they've acted it out. But when it was finished and they came to, so what? Having a beautiful voice doesn't make you so after. That sort of thing there was there. Mm-hmm. So, now to get back to which was the point where I started from.
When you remember.
The point. Yeah. Now, there were many of Baba's disciples, and several, I wouldn't say many, there were several Baba's disciples who were persistently requesting Mother to give them things of Baba when he was young.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, sir. So, what happened was that when I used to come from home from school for lunch in the afternoons, the convent of Jesus and Mary was not so far away. I used to go and I'd come back. I used to come for lunch because my school wasn't so far away. So, and my mother was so methodical, so organized, so particular in everything, that everything was in its place, everything was done in its time. She knew at what time I would be coming from school, so the warm plate would be on my table, the food would be just so there on the kitchen stove, the wick just so low, this place here, all that. And then she would go on doing her work till I came. So one day, something happened in school so that we were released from school earlier than usual. Not one day, I mean that day, the day I'm talking about, the day. That day, I came back early from school, about half an hour earlier for lunch than I would usually do. And as I came in, the door was ajar, and I went in, and my mother didn't hear me coming. Mother didn't hear me step up towards her room. And then I just stopped. There used to be a semi-cupboard in that room. The best piece of furniture from the cupboard. We used to have in those days the kind of Victorian furniture. Every Parsi home had. You know, very, very much carved. Our dining table was, had the feet of three dragons entwined together and things. So there was this cupboard, and the Baba's bed had the little tile, colored tile at one end. All very beautiful stuff. That was the pattern of the day. That was the vogue. So here was this cupboard, which I'd never seen Mother open. Now, I'm not a very curious or very observant person, but I still remember it was with me. What's in that cupboard? I forgot. I'd do something else. Again, sometime later, what's in that cupboard? I've never seen Mother open that cupboard.
Did it have glass
windows? No. It was a beautiful sort of rosewood or walnut kind of a thing, carved. And I meant to ask Mother someday, but never got round to it. Now, that day, when I came home early from school and stopped short at the sight of Mother sitting in front of that cupboard, the cupboard panel was open and clothes were out. And there she was seated with a pair of trousers and coat like that on her hand. The legs of the trousers? Mm-hmm. Is that what you call it?
Mm-hmm.
They were draped from over her arm to her knee, to her other knee, like this, like you exhibit something, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
And this was draped on her. Baba's trousers were draped on Mother's arms and knees, and she was just looking at it, and big tears were rolling down and dropping on that material. And I had never seen Mother cry. Even if she had thought she'd never show it, she had that spirit. And I just stopped, and I looked. Mother crying. And those tears dropping on. And then something must have happened, some little sound from me, or maybe again. Suddenly Mother was aware that I was there. And very practical, she put in her, well, how's that you come so early? I didn't know, is it a holiday today? Blah, blah, blah. She went to the kitchen, brought out the warm plate, and brought out the food, and served me food, and that was that. And I knew, and looking back, and say, oh, then I was determined now to look someday into the cupboard. But the next time when I saw in a few days the mother had opened the cupboard, it was empty. She had given his things to the one who had asked for it. And not just given his things. She had given him to the world. All right. He's not my son.
How old
were
you that day,
Mom? Yeah?
How old
was I?
Oh, no.
10? 11? 10, 11. 11, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw that there was nothing in that cupboard. My mother was so practical. I'll tell you some of the it's delightful, some of the things she did. For instance, if a lock of a cupboard didn't work, or say, if it didn't work, or she lost a key, then she would not just make a duplicate of the key, she'd change the lock.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd have to call the chavivala, the key man, the man who deals with keys and locks. So before the chavivala came, she would remove all the clothes from that cupboard, and put it away, and put old stuff in this cupboard that had to be made a lock of, you know, that had to be seen to by the locksmith. So that when the locksmith was working on the cupboard, he'd just say, these are old things, that if he saw good saris and good things, he might be tempted to make a duplicate key, might come in the night and open it. And Jesus, my dear thief. She would come with me every time I came to Baba for my holidays as a child from Pune. When Baba was in Hyderabad or Nasik, Mother would always come along with me. So when we would go from Ahmednagar to Hyderabad in a tonga, for me, when I would come, when our train would approach Ahmednagar station, and on that big water tank, see in large letters, Ahmednagar, and my heart would beat along with it, Ahmednagar, Ahmednagar, Baba, Baba, Hyderabad. There. So now I realize some of your feelings. I mean, I realize, because otherwise, even though we've often said, what is there in Ahmednagar, you know? Drab, dry, dusty, this piece of land. But I realize that. So when we would come, and then when we'd get in a tonga and go to Mehrabad, I tell you, the difference to what it is now, that road from the station to Mehrabad, and what it was then, maybe 50 years ago, that's right. You will not believe it. It was so isolated, so barren, so devoid of any hut or house or population or traffic. It used to be awesome. It used to be frightening, especially when the train came, say 4 o'clock or something like that. To go that long journey, you'd hear the horses' hoofs clop, echo of it. It was frightening. But today, it's traffic, so much traffic, so much people, so many huts. Quite different. So those 2 months with Baba, mother being there with me, and I used to be with the women. That's why I always wanted to be like them. I wanted to be the nun. But Baba would send me back to learn at school another year, and then come out first, so we would go back. But coming to Mehrabad, coming to Nasik, to Baba, the train even sounded, Baba, 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 Baba. You know, going back, I'd be crying and crying and crying. And my mother never sat in a women's compartment. That's another practical point. In a women's compartment, a man can dress as a woman with a burqa, and might step in, and then when the train stops, you know, he might bring out a knife, and who knows. So she always had in a mixed compartment, men and women. There used to be such compartments. So we would. And I was so engrossed with my own misery, and nobody existed. And I was going away from Baba, and I'd cry, and I'd cry. And I suddenly realized how selfish I was being one day, when my mother said to me in the dialect, Persian dialect, Dari, she said, Nani, they think I'm your stepmother or your mother-in-law, that I've been beating you or something. Will you, they're not looking at you, Nani. They're all looking at me. Will you stop crying? So I suddenly looked up. They were glaring daggers at my mother. What's she doing to that sweet little thing? But then as soon as I'd go home, first of all, I had my orders. You know, I mustn't do this, I must do that, I mustn't do this, I must do that. At such a time, I must take my medicine, I must learn, and I must obey mother, and all those little things. But I had a little tin, battered little trunk, a suitcase, a box. I think you all just say box. But that has a latch, you have a lock, you have these handles you can pick up, and it's sort of made of tin. But to me, it was very precious. It was my very own. So the moment I'd get home, I'd start packing in it for the next time. And I tell Mother, don't touch my box. And she said, I wouldn't touch it with a pair of tongs, that box. So I'd put it there, and I'd start putting in presents, buying presents with my pocket money. Now, this is for Mera, this is for Naja, this is for Khoshed, this is for Valubai, this is for that, there was another Khoshed man on each one. Big Khoshed, now, little by little, with that pocket money, I started doing that. I had a good accounting head, I'm sure, because for those 2 annas, I'd make do with so many things and collect and save, and then I'd even give it to the beggar, because I could never resist them. But there was one day I had no patience, and this beggar had hands only up to here. So she flopped them, and made strange sounds, and I turned around and I said, no, not today, I have no money. Because actually I had one paisa, but I hadn't gotten anything for myself that day, and I didn't want to give that one paisa. So she went, I said, no, this was going on within me. She was going to take my paisa. But suddenly I realized, look, I mean, that's in my financial head, I think. I said, why not get peanuts? Give her half and keep half. You could get peanuts for one paisa in those days like that. So I said, all right, you follow me. Come on, let's go to the peanuts. I think she was a bit deaf too, deaf and dumb. So we got the peanuts, we divided. So she was happy, I was happy, Pat was happy. So then...